So, here we are. Wow, it's been a while.
Long time. Wow. No telling a damn story.
Yeah, we've been telling stories elsewhere and a few damn stories, but sure. We haven't been doing it here. So, welcome back. Welcome back, Chris. You know, and welcome back, me. Yeah, there's me. There's a bigger shot of me, and there's a nice shot of you. Right? So, here we are. And actually, the other cool thing is. We were going to talk about. We're going
to
try.
We were at the con together this weekend.
Yeah, that was the other thing that we're going to. We were at a con. We were actually at a convention together. And how long has it been since we've actually done that?
It's been a while. Not counting going to see Kids Comic Con, which is your creation. Being at a con. Gee, last time we were at a con for purely. Signing and promoting might have been Race Against Time those days, you know.
Wow.
Between then and now, it was always, you know, Alex Simmons, the great hyphenate, you know, it was, you know, writer, then slash, you know, a producer, Kid Comic Con and activities and teacher slash wizard slash, you know, former action hero, you know. It's hard hanging out with Alex Simmons.
The man's
got lots of identities.
The man of many faces. That's me.
But you know, while we're speaking about that, one of the things that we were talking about before we started was getting to see a couple of the old faces, you know, and we were talking about Don McGregor. God bless Don McGregor. Still, you know, he's a, you know, God bless him. I don't want to, you know, say anything wrong, but he's a little fella. But, you know, you can hear him and you can feel his energy from five or six tables away, you know, and this guy is a guy who did the Black Panther in the mid to late 60s. He's still rocking, still entertaining. I had a couple of guys online I was watching. They had leather-bound volumes of the original run. The comic books, they had them leather bound.
Wow.
This is the kind of loyalty that some of these guys show. And then we were talking about Marv Wolfman.
Marv. Oh, wow. I'll tell my Marv story in a moment.
Right. Well, I'm hoping to feed into that. But as I passed the Marv Wolfman table where he was signing, he had a collection of cosplay people dressed as his version of the Teen Titans, waiting to see him. And
so that's like Robin and Raven and who else?
Starfire.
Starfire.
And her makeup was amazing. She was orange skinned and that purple, almost a bikini, you know, that kind of thing. And then there was Kid Flash in the guys. You know, one of the things I was saying to you, there was the quality of the cosplaying, hats off, and you know, big salute to the people who do this because they're not getting paid. They're doing amazingly detailed, accurate work, and then they're just going around to give other fans a jolt and pose for them and all that. And it was really cool to see that, but it touched me to see him, see them waiting to see. You know, it was like waiting to see their dad, waiting to see their god. You know.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Marv had a really good run. I mean, on the Teen Titans, he had a good run. On the I think he was the first one. I could be wrong, but I think he was the first one to do the split universe, the multiple universe story, and to, you know, to really, what was it, Infinite Earth? Or I can't. I wish I could.
Crisis on Infinite Earth.
There you go. Marv did that opus. And I remember at the time, you know, everybody was just blown away by it. It was really exciting stuff to read. The relationships between the characters in the Teen Titans went from just, you know, action, young action heroes to real relationship challenges and freakouts. As a matter of fact, Robin became his own person, partially in that series. He finally said, you know, I'm growing up. I've got to move forward. And he starts by leading the Titans, but eventually he becomes Nightwing and moves on and so forth. So, yeah, Marv was there. Marv was one of those writers who I knew here in New York for years. You know, he worked at Marvel. It was Marv Wolfman, Don McGregor.
What was that run with the Teen Titans and all that?
See, now, if you told me you were going to do that, I would have done my homework. But, you know,
even if you give me a decade, was it the late 60s, early 70s?
No, see, I believe it was the 70s, 80s myself.
Okay.
You know,
right.
Because McGregor, met McGregor in 69 at a Comic-Con, New York Comic Convention in 1969. And he wasn't working for Marvel then. So McGregor and I became friends over that year. And in the summer of 1970... we came to a New York Comic Con. It was a Phil Suling comic convention at that time. We came with Detectives Incorporated, which was a concept and a story that everybody knows McGregor created. But I was the first artist to draw Denning and Rainier and to draw a Detectives Incorporated story. And if any of
on that line behind the guy with the bound. The very next guy, I was waiting to get him to sign Detectives Incorporated.
Well, I was going to say, if any of you guys have, because it was Xerox, we went to the printer just before we left Providence, Rhode Island. We went to the printer and had a bunch of these things Xeroxed and stapled and all that. It was old, old school. And we came to the convention. So if anybody has that issue right now is worth zip. But I would love to see it.
But I would love to see it.
And if you have it and you happen to catch me at a con, you'll watch me faint and then I'll happily sign it.
Yeah.
But that was it. So McGregor started he came to New York in 70 for the comic convention, began talking to people. I think we met Jim Warren, Billy Graham, and a number of others, but in particular Jim Warren and Billy Graham, we met at that convention, and Don tells that story really well. And Don's relationship with Warren Publications began then, and he started writing for them, and then Marvel, and so forth. So I would say from the 70s, from 1970 forward, was when Don started to build up his now, you know, huge tome of work in the comic book industry.
There are two more pieces of puzzle I have to mention. One other piece was, at the convention, was Denny O'Neill.
Oh, yeah.
And you saw Denny, and what's your connection with Denny?
Well, it's a funny thing because anybody who knows me for Blackjack and knows that I like Denny, and Denny and I are friends, and I consider him a really good friend. I hadn't met Denny before. I guess it was maybe 1980. I want to say 88 or something like that, and I had created Blackjack right around that time. I'd started writing the character and the story and everything, and I went to DC Comics to see Dick Giordano. Dick and I were friends at that point, and he was, I believe, VP of the art department at DC at that time. And I showed him what I was working on, and he mentored me through the process of creating a comic book story about Blackjack. You know, really helped me get that together. And we then were going to present it to DC Comics for the possibility of them publishing it, because Dick felt it would be a good addition to the run. And we brought in an editor, and the editor had his say in it, and we got it all together, got the presentation all together. And just as we were about to submit it, DC hired a new editor to look and to oversee their line of books and to really sort of, you know, get stuff going and get some juices flowing in there and bring some new energy and really just blow DC off the map in a positive way. And one of the things that Denny did was turn down Blackjack.
Denny! What the hell, Denny?
You know, and I remember thinking, wait, no! But, you know, that's what happened. And it was a few years later that I met him. And again, nice guy. And I really, you know, I felt, as I got to know him, I learned a lot from him and everything. And then what happened was I did Blackjack as an independent project. We premiered it at the 1996 San Diego Comic-Con. And the first issue was published in September of 1996. First issue of Blackjack, Second Bite of the Cobra. So then over a 2 or 3 year period, we were publishing the stories, and Joe Ilyich was working for DC Comics, and Joe really liked the Blackjack series. Joe introduced, I believe Joe was associate editor at that time, working under Denny, and he introduced my work to Denny, and Denny and Joe called me in and hired me to create a new character for the Batman universe, which I came up with Orpheus. And yeah. So that was when Denny, that was the first chance that Denny and I had a chance to work together. And then
he came out with a five-part special series, right?
Five-part miniseries, yeah. Blackjack, Orpheus Rising. I'm sorry, there you go. Batman, Orpheus Rising. Yeah. A little slip of the tongue, a little Freudian thing there. Yeah, Batman, Orpheus Rising. It was a five-part miniseries, which I had a good time with, and I've met people over the years who've read it, collected it, loved it, so that was good. I can only say that, you know, Denny left, I think it was about, oh, I don't know, maybe, I think he left the DC somewhere before the first issue came out, and new editors came in, and let's just say that after the miniseries ran and all that, there was two or three more stories done with Orpheus where other writers used him, and then they killed him. And I think Orpheus is maybe one of the few heroes that they've killed and has not returned.
We have to spread that rumor. That, you know, remember how the rumor for years was the only character who stays dead is Bucky.
Ah.
Right? And then they turned him into the Winter Soldier, and yep. Now he's in movies.
Yep, yep.
Okay, we have to say the only character in comics that stays dead
is Orpheus.
Is Orpheus.
Okay, now let's get that rumor going. So
we'll see.
Yeah.
Justice League 2, Orpheus Rising. There was one other person that we were talking about that was supposed to be at this Comic-Con that did not make it.
Yeah, yeah, and I didn't find out about that until later. We
could talk about that. So.
Yeah. Once again, I've been fortunate enough to have met some really talented and genuine people in the comic book industry over the years. I mean, first as a fan, and then later as a comic professional myself. And I mentioned Dick Giordano, Denny O'Neill, you know, these are great guys. But another person, and Don, obviously, you know, McGregor, he and I became great buds. But another person who I respect tremendously and who is a super, super talent in the industry and well-recognized for it is George Perez. And
yeah.
George is amazing. He's an amazing artist, amazing writer. He did that wonderful run on Wonder Woman where he really brought in Greek mythology and at the same time really developed the characters as more human. And there's just some really great stuff that he did, both as a writer and illustrator on the Wonder Woman series. But George was supposed to be, you know, and we've never mentioned the con that we were all attending this past weekend. It was the East Coast Comic Convention, East Coast Comic Con. I believe this was like right. The second year. And George was supposed to be there, and I was there. I didn't see McGregor the whole time I was there. We kept missing each other. I did see Denny. I did see Marv Wolfman, and that was great. But then yesterday, which is today's Thursday, so it was, you know, 2-3 days after the con, I read on Facebook a piece written by George Perez stating why he had to leave the con abruptly. And what it turned out was that George, on his way from the West Coast to the East Coast, had felt uncomfortable, some chest discomfort, but sort of, you know, said, well, it's nothing really, really horrible. It'll probably be okay. He got to the hotel in New Jersey, because the East Coast Comic-Con is in New Jersey at the Meadowlands. He got to the hotel in New Jersey, really didn't feel well, called down for a doctor. Doctor led to an ambulance. Ambulance led to a hospital. And what they found out was George had actually, you know, suffered a mild heart attack. He's going to have surgery, put in some stents and all that. You know, he says the way he worded this was wonderful. You know, he's feeling positive. You know, it looks like he's going to be fine. And then he did something that really speaks to George as the cult, the penultimate cultured gentleman, graceful gentleman that he really is. And there's not a whole lot of those in the industry. George went on to comment that because of his fans, because of the people who have bought the comics and because of the deals he has so he gets royalties and all that, and the merchandising, the movies that have used characters he's worked on and all that, he's financially in a good position. He can afford the medical treatments that he needs to save his life. And he said that many of his friends and fellow professionals are not in that situation, unfortunately. And so he, George, felt that if this had to happen to anyone, he was glad that it happened to him because he was in a position to pay for the treatments that he needed. And I thought, my God, you know, I mean, he didn't have to say that. This was not him grandstanding. This was a human being speaking from the heart, no pun intended. And it raised, you know, the thought, obviously, that there are people who are not in that situation. There are people in our industry who have worked for years. I mean, years. Some of us were raised on their comics, on the stories they wrote and the art that they drew. And if they were to be hit with certain illnesses now, and I know a few people who have been, they could not take care of themselves. There is no funds to see them through this, either from a medical standpoint or for food and housing, you know, while they recuperate. And that's pretty damn scary.
And after today's vote in the House of Representatives, you know, that fear is spreading nationwide.